Welcome to Conscious Corner with Vanity. My name is Vanity Reed Dieterville. I'm a native of Charleston, South Carolina, a junior political science student at the College of Charleston, the lead podcast intern here at the Office of Sustainability, and a transgender woman of color who's forced to take a critical look at the intersections of her everyday involvement. I'm here to bring awareness to you about personal, social, economic, political, and environmental initiatives at the College of Charleston, which are more commonly referred to as the five pillars of sustainability. And I hope to highlight these initiatives for you through the sound of my voice. Welcome to this week's Conscious Corner with Vanity. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Zaylee Butler. Zaylee, could you please give everyone your name again, your major, and your pronouns?
Hey, guys. So my name is Zaylee Butler. I am a major in political science and secondary education with a minor in religious studies. The pronouns I like to use are she, her, yeah. So, interesting fact about myself, I'm really involved in, you know, how education sustainability, so how institutions value education, such as federal institutions, so that may be the monetary side of it, the legislation side of it, mm-hmm. and also the intersectionality between budget and legislation and how mm-hmm. that affects students with, you know, job seeking mm-hmm. skills, and also later, you know, later events in their life. Okay. So that's what my primary focus is. So public policy, basically, and its effects on education.
And we've been looking at some really interesting ways that public policy has affected negatively mm-hmm. some schools in the state yeah. with the whole minimally adequate kind of attitude towards education. If you have anything you want to say about that term.
Wow. Okay. So I have a, I don't want to say soapbox. Soapbox sounds so negative. But minimally adequate is not adequate.
Period.
So I do agree with the statement Nikki Haley said, who's the former governor of South Carolina. She said South Carolina students are different from California students. But we also shouldn't forget that jobs are not different across state lines.
Good point.
We also have to know that, you know, when you go seek a job in Seattle, they're still looking for those same requirements. So not all South Carolina students stay in South Carolina, even though we have a specific economy compared to other states.
Right.
You can't just solely base somebody staying their education on them staying here in the state, staying
yeah,
local.
Yeah, especially if you want them to be competitive.
Right, so we have to become globally competitive and not just nationally competitive. So when you think about minimally adequate, you're eliminating that national and international market. Mm-hmm. And you're actually limiting your citizens and what impact they can have on not only the state, not only the nation, but the world, basically. Okay. So minimally adequate is just not.
That's not it.
It's not it, Chief.
All right. So we could go into a soapbox about this topic all day if we really wanted to, but let's get to the topic at hand. In what ways on campus are you directly involved with student recruitment?
So I have held several positions in different organizations. So currently I'm the new member coordinator for Student Ambassadors. So Student Ambassadors is out of the Office of Admissions. And Student Ambassadors' mission is to recruit and retain minority and first generation students to the College of Charleston.
Okay.
Through recruiting and yield events. So yield events, yield is that time between students applying to the college mm-hmm. and actually accepting. So
okay, doing never knew all that
their,
term.
Yeah, so knowing, doing all of their like paperwork and things like that. So we really want students to, after they've been accepted, we really want them here. So that's right. a yield. So we want to yield those students. And then we have recruitment events. So like our MOVE, which we're actually hosting today, which is our multicultural overnight visit experience, where we recruit minority students. So you can be a freshman in high school, that's as young as we offer, to a senior in high school. And we just give you the opportunity to get some real campus experience. So you stay with a student ambassador like myself in the residence halls. So it's strictly on campus students that participate in this event. And that really recruits students to college. It's one of the programs that brought me here to the college because it's the only program, I mean, we're the only college that offers a program like that that's free.
Okay.
Other colleges do that, but it costs a pretty like $300. We also do an event called Junior and Senior Project, where we specifically look at rising juniors and rising seniors.
Okay.
Over the summer, we spend a week with them on campus, so they get a free meal plan, free housing, and they also have the ability to look at ACT prep, SAT prep, and how they can prepare to have the applicable test scores and requirements for the College of Charleston. So it's kind of like a preliminary recruitment, get your interest, pique your interest in the College of Charleston.
So like, not what Spectra is, but okay. Yeah.
So Spectra differs because Spectra is accepted students.
Okay.
So Spectra is a program done out of MSPS, which is our Multicultural Student Program and Services. And Spectra is a program where they come for 1 month, so the month of July into the month of August, and they take two college classes, so they are able to take 6 credits and establish a GPA.
Okay.
The summer before they start their freshman year. So this is just kind of like a threshold transition program. So it makes the transition from high school to college a lot easier.
A little more seamless.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not a requirement either. And
okay.
Anybody can do it, but it's mainly geared towards our multicultural students.
Now, you said the program that you're involved in now was one of your major indicators as to if you would come to the school or not. Mm-hmm. Did you participate in one of those tours before you came to CFC?
So I didn't do a C40 tour. I didn't do like a formal C40 tour when I first, and C40 is our tour guide association. But I did do the MOVE program, and a tour was a part of that.
Okay.
But I really fell in love with the environment. So Grimmage, who's our advisor, called student ambassadors his own family.
Shout out to Grimmage.
Shout out to Kenyatta. Yada the Barber on Instagram. But he calls it a family, and that's what kind of, and we call it a family too. But that's kind of like the standard we live by. And I just really saw that family. I saw the family, and I was like, yeah, this is it. Not degrading any other schools, but Winthrop and University of Alabama were in my top three too. So when I went to go visit the schools, I didn't feel that familial effect. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I came here, I was like, ooh, yes, I love all these people. I'm still cool with a lot of the people I met then. Even though they've like graduated, like they have kids on the way type graduated. The program kind of influenced me because I felt that familiar. I knew I was going to be secure academically no matter where I went. But it was really based on that community feel.
Gotcha.
You know.
Okay. Very cool. Now, you mentioned C40 before, and I've been wondering for a while what the distinct differences are between student ambassadors and C40, because I've heard some things, but I want to hear it from, I've gotten some tea, but I want to know what the real dish is. So do you feel like there are any specific differences between cohorts like C40 and student ambassadors, and if there are any covert biases that go along with those differences?
So the differences between C40 and and student ambassadors is basically we intentionally recruit students to the College of Charleston. So our recruitment efforts are intentional. C40's intentions are kind of secondary. So not to say that in a bad way, but it's just not their prime focus. They're the premier tour guide organization on campus. So their main responsibility is to inform you about the college. So parents, students, families, visitors who just want to take the tour for fun.
Okay.
That's basically their, you know, goal, is to inform you about the college. So different departments, residence life, meal plans, things like that. Basic college things. Student ambassadors, our goal is to intentionally recruit students, like I said before, to the college of minority and first generation status. So first generation students who are coming from families who haven't attended college, so they'll be the first student in their family to attend college.
Okay.
So we look at that demographic. C40 kind of just is everyone, can be literally anybody
okay.
goes on a tour. And if students make, and I'm a part of C40, and I've gotten Instagram messages saying, oh, I chose the College of Charleston because your tour was so great. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So like,
okay.
Yeah, so you, it's a secondary, you know, I don't know the word, result of being
indicator.
A tour guide. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Of being a tour guide. Like, you get to recruit students to the college, but it's not necessarily that's your intention. Like,
gotcha.
Your intention is to inform, make them aware.
Okay.
Now, to refer to this tea that you were referencing earlier, you, well, mm-hmm. the tea is really, I mean, it's cold now.
Okay.
You know,
all right. It's not hot even, tea.
It's not hot.
Okay.
You
well.
Know, so the tea is cold because, you know, C40 and SA, we kind of had a joint meet, a general body meeting actually a couple weeks ago on the 18th, and we mm-hmm. had several joint exec board meetings beforehand.
Okay.
And we were just kind of like in the exec board meeting, like, where did this beef come from? And then we were just kind of like, we kind of realized that it was our predecessors that were telling us that this beef existed. So C40 was on campus before SA, obviously. So
I can understand.
SA
yeah.
came in like 06.
So relatively recent.
Yeah, so we're a relatively new organization.
Okay.
On campus, but it, and C40 kind of classified as this elitist organization.
Now that I've heard.
Because there are, because the way you get into C40, it's a very tedious application process. So
we
go look at your application. You have to have a 2.5 GPA. You go in a series of interviews, group questions, things like that. A prepared statement about one building on campus. So it's just really rigorous requirements to be a part of C40. And also the demographic of C40 is more sorority members, fraternity members, because that's who they were recruiting to be a part of the organization, because that's just who was in it.
Like specific so, leadership.
Right.
Okay.
So it was kind of like inherently rich rich people who come from money.
Okay.
Being a part of C40.
Now
and
I
then
understand.
When SA came around, it was more of the African American students, you know, not using all as with air quotes. I'm doing air quotes right now, y'all. So all of the students, you know, all African American students have some type of struggle story. We don't come from wealth.
Right.
But
traditionally.
Traditionally.
Yeah.
But the gag is 52% of middle income households are African American. That's the tea. Anyways.
Real tea.
Real tea. cite Dr. Green. Anyways. But so you had this organization looking at, I'm like, oh, it's the new org. They don't have the same socioeconomic, mm-hmm. you know, background as us. So we can't relate to them. So we just gonna make fake beef, you know?
Right.
So, you know, this class war, race war. You
gotcha.
Know?
Yeah.
And a race war kind of like happened naturally, but mm-hmm. not like intentionally.
Okay.
It happened naturally, not intentionally, because it just so happened that we catered to minority
one organization
students.
Was catered towards
right.
students of color, and the others have historically been about the prestige of the institution.
Right.
Okay.
So it wasn't really intentional beef, like, oh, I don't like you because, yeah.
But it just turned into a you can't sit with us type of thing.
Right. It
okay.
kind of turned and they became kind of mutually exclusive. But now they're not so mutually exclusive. So I think
oh.
there are 8 members who have like crossover. So
okay.
8 members who are in both C40 and SA.
Okay.
We also give tour training in SA. So I get my expertise from being an orientation intern and being a tour guide. I get to train essays to give 45-minute tours, quick tours, spiels about the college.
Okay.
So they're no longer, like, extremely mutually exclusive, but they're still two separate entities, still two separate recruitment processes. But
okay.
the tea's cold. We're good.
Okay.
We've resolved
well,
our...
We'll refrigerate the tea for now,
yeah.
but in the event that we need to reboil her, we certainly will. Moving on, before we go into the next question, I just want to enlighten you about some stats that I was looking at recently.
Come on,
for
stats.
A few weeks now. Well, we like empirically based evidence.
Yes.
So I'm looking at numbers as they pertain to minority population at the College of Charleston. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I wanted to go back 20 years from this point and 10 years from this point,
okay,
just to try to get a baseline understanding of what a progression would look like. And it kind of bothered me because in 1999, you know, for instance, the spring of 1999, the white student population at the college accounted for 88.6% of the entire student population,
okay,
which left about a little under 12% accounting for all minority students, which would be African American, American Indian, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
They would be for about 12% of the entire student population. And so we fast forward to the fall of, or the spring of 2009, excuse me. And so we have an increase in population. The population increases about 400 students, mm-hmm, total, undergrad and graduate students. And so we look and we see that the white population in 2009 is a marginal decrease. It's 82.9%.
Mm-hmm.
So you have about a 4% decrease in white students. And so that leaves the remainder for students of color.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, we get to fall of 2018, which was the semester that just passed, and we have white students accounting for 77.3. So they dropped down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to African-American students, I noticed that there never was really ever higher of a proportion than 8% Black students, undergrad and graduate, mm-hmm, at the College of Charleston. And so I just want to ask you, given that information and your honest opinion, have the institution's methods of recruitment for minority students been effective?
In short, no. So that's just like, and so being a part of the minority community and also being a candidate for those processes,
mm-hmm,
I saw that it wasn't really advertised to me. Like, this wasn't on the front page of the website. This wasn't, you had to scroll down a bit to find it. You had to go find it yourself. Like,
right,
you had to know people. The only reason I knew that about this event is because of the admissions counselors who had come visit my school, which were Fred Quick and Ms. McDowell, who are both African-American and work in pre-access.
Okay.
And diversity initiatives. So you really don't know about these opportunities, even when you have, per se, another counselor from another division, because not all counselors work in diversity pre-access.
Okay.
So everybody's not educated on our junior senior project, MOVE, other events.
Okay.
So it's not really advertised to our African-American students or other students of color because it's just not profitable.
Do we not have the resources to do more advertisement to those students, or what's the blockade?
We do have the resources. the resources are there.
Well,
the school has, believe it or not, money. and we have a great marketing department who,
marketing is on point.
Marketing is great. And if we can market, you know, being the best school, the prettiest campus in America, we can
consistently,
right, consistently, and make those large, what's those things called, like the stand-ups that have like, if those are all over campus, I want to see advertisement for MOVE, our MOVE programs, our junior and senior projects, our Crossing the Cistern program, our OID scholarships, our Spectra program.
Definitely OID scholarships. I've benefited from that one time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Avery Research Center.
Definitely Avery.
Avery Research is a staple in Charleston, but you wouldn't
Definitely.
Know that if you didn't do your, if you
exactly
didn't see it.
Exactly.
So a lot of people don't know Avery was Avery for the normal school.
Yeah.
Where Septima P. Clark attended school. That's a huge
shout thing. Out to Kamala for knowing her knowledge.
Yeah, come on. we love educated people.
Yes.
But you wouldn't know the resources on campus. Even in tours, I had to push for, you know, people mentioning the National Panhellenic Women in Council when they talked about Greek life.
Because they only mention IFC.
IFC and Penn.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. you have all these resources on campus that don't get talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sorry, I just got a very upsetting text. Anyways.
It's okay.
But you have these resources that aren't broadcast, and mm-hmm. the way that you brought, if we're able to broadcast our fine arts, if we're able mm-hmm. to broadcast all these other departments, why can't we broadcast diversity? So there's that problem. You know,
okay.
I see that disconnect because we advertise so many things. We advertise our marine biology program.
Mm-hmm.
We do our QEP. Mm-hmm. We make those very prevalent. So mm-hmm. make diversity prevalent and not as a, you know, a token type thing. Don't make, you know, just single out our best and brightest from our minority community. Like, that was a huge thing with tokenism. So Sandrika Goins, who's no longer a student here, she was the face of the Boundless campaign. And she wasn't receiving, she was receiving scholarship money, but in her own right, she wasn't being compensated for being the face of Boundless. And I'm not saying that you do have to be compensated to be the face of something, but when you're only using that student because of their ethnicity, then something's wrong.
I agree.
Instead of their accomplishments, because Sandrika is gold on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Sandrika is, I think she had chemistry and physics double major.
My God.
Like, sis was killing it, okay? She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. She also used to be a student ambassador as well. That's how I know her. But it's just...
But you're right. Yeah, if you want to match a face to an experience, then you definitely need to compensate that experience
right.
as much as you can. As if you plan on profiting from that, especially.
And the most recent blunder, I think the marketing department did, well, in my opinion, this is my personal opinion, I have to heard anybody else talk about it. but our adult education program here at the college, on the website, I don't think it's still up there anymore, but it might be. But on the, like, the slides of pictures, you know how it changes slides
yeah.
or whatever. So it's a Black woman on the face of our adult education program. I don't like that. So everybody
yeah.
in the classroom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Not just zoomed in on African Americans.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I know that sounds like a reach.
And nitpicky,
but
you have to see how tokenism reaches us in many
right.
ways. And so those things stand out.
And also stereotypes. Why does the African American woman have to be on the face of an adult education, you know, program? You know, because why is she the only person seeking adult education? You know,
very good point.
So it could be a white male seeking adult education.
It could be a veteran.
Veterans, right.
Yeah. Which there are many of those.
Right. And then we have a senior citizen program, but, you know, you don't see the senior citizens on the front page. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I would select, you know, when you advertise, select carefully. And
mm-hmm.
also when you attach the, you know, meaning of the advertisement, make sure your wording is very careful. And also don't tokenize our students, because it's also degrading, you know, in a lot of instances. Like, you know, I don't want our students to feel like, oh, I've worked this hard and all I get is an article because I'm Black and I achieved excelling in this one area.
Mm-hmm.
When I have other counterparts and exceeding in other areas, but they're not getting recognized, but I'm the token in that. You know, and I have other counterparts of other races who are doing just as well as I am. Why
right.
couldn't they be the face of this program? Are you, like, there's different ways to...
There's many things to take into consideration when it comes to broadcasting and advertising, definitely.
Right.
And it's not my strong suit, but I know that you have to be intentional of thinking of all the lenses to look through before you advertise something. That's just right. part of your job.
And then also back to the numbers. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm going to keep going. But when I also sat on a committee of sorts, kind of makeshift of students that kind of gave their opinion to the Board of Trustees during this recent presidential search. Mm-hmm. And I think it was September, and I was sitting in front of Ms. Renee. I can't remember her last name. It was Romberger, I think is her last name or something like that.
Okay.
But she was the chair of the presidential search committee on the Board of Trustees. And I said something about first generation students, making sure they're comfortable on campus. She whispered to the lawyer that they had or the consultant that they had and said, write that down. I said, so you weren't considering first generation students. And a lot of first generation students that we have are African American.
Exactly.
So that's a whole nother, you know, reach. And I was just like, so it's September. You're making a choice in probably close to November. Mm-hmm. And you're just considering this. And we've been doing this since how long? Since last September. Y'all knew Glenn was going to retire. Y'all knew it was coming. So you knew it was coming. So why are we just now considering this demographic
right
to cater to? So I also think CFC does a lot of afterthought initiatives, not proactive,
instead of proactive
they're
measures.
Reactive.
Okay.
And I just really think we got to clean that up. And that affects a lot of our numbers as well. Instead of being proactive, we're reactive. Like the Talented 10th. So
is that a program here?
It's a program. So through the Office of Admissions, it's the Tri-County area. So Dorchester, Berkeley, and Charleston. Okay. So they take the top 10% of those schools in Charleston, Berkeley, whatever. And those are vastly African-American students, especially in the Charleston County area. And they get awarded scholarships, but that's not advertised, you know, as heavily as it should be.
Right.
Crossing the Cistern, that's for African-American students with 2.5 or less GPA. Why I gotta have a 2.5 or less GPA to receive scholarship funding?
Right. Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it's like a motivational program, but still, let's work on trying to, you know, make that accessible, make more funding accessible without having terrible grades or having some condition attached to it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So make funding accessible, because that's a lot. Because College Charles is expensive. Average tuition, I think, is $29,000 now. Mm-hmm. So that's room and board, everything included. Tuition is like $13,000.
Yeah, and it's definitely gone up a few thousand dollars within the past couple of years.
And when I started here, which was 2 years ago, tuition averaged about $10,500. Now it's like low 13s. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're steadily increasing tuition, and that doesn't make college any more accessible to anybody.
So to all those who can, and please don't forget to give back to the college once you've graduated.
Yep.
We would greatly appreciate it.
And also, your FAFSA is due today.
Fill out your FAFSA. Mm-hmm. And I need to do that because mine is incomplete right now.
It's March 1st.
Okay. All right. So moving on, you kind of talked about, in your perspective, what improvements could be made. And so I'm really glad that you touched on that. You touched on diversity and inclusion and how you feel about how it's been used here on campus.
Touch on it again.
But you can definitely add some more information about how you feel the term diversity and inclusion is used here on the illustrious College of Charleston's campus.
I got to get real close to the microphone for this one so y'all can hear me. So it is a check box for reaccreditation. It is a check box for reaccreditation, and that is why we reference, it's not in this report right here in the, but they do reference our students of Jewish ethnicity as one of our demographics in some cases when they refer to our diversity population.
Okay.
Because, you know, sometimes Jewish faith crosses the borders of religion and ethnicity.
Yes.
So technically, our Jewish population is our largest minority population.
Here
at the college.
That.
It's at 8%, somewhere ballpark it around there.
Okay.
It's also It also has our largest student organization.
JSU
or Hillel, however you want to call it, whatever you want to call it. And they're a part of the Great Eight. And the Great Eight is a program started by Alicia Cadill. Shout out to Alicia. Love you. but she started a program where it's the top eight organizations on campus. They give, diverse organizations, so BSU, JSU, ASA, things like that.
Okay.
That's Asian Student Association.
African Students.
They're not included. Well, this just got started last year.
Okay.
After the Halloween incident. I don't think UAS is a part of it, but it's like other organizations on campus that are heavily involved.
Okay.
I'm not going to quote myself on knowing. So SGA, things like that. I'm not going to quote myself on knowing all the Great Eight, but they do get to put their input in about diversity.
Okay.
On campus, because they are technically a diverse group, but mm-hmm. College Charleston uses that for reaccreditation.
It's really funny that you should mention Jewish students being the largest minority subset, because I don't see them mentioned on any of these recent statistics of the population proportions.
So that's something that's learned in, that's one of our, well, Office of Admissions uses that, those numbers, just to give you what demographics look like at the College of Charleston. And that's something also that we say on C40, if they do ask, you know, what's our largest population, Jewish students and then African American students.
Okay.
So those are our two largest, but it's not explicit. So they do get lumped in with the white non-Latino group.
Okay. Understood. Okay. Well, thank you for your gems of knowledge. Lastly, do you have any other information regarding diversity and inclusion that you'd like to offer to the world of sustainability? Any organizations you're a part of, any initiatives, any endeavors?
So I just want to say, connecting to my personal, like my personal studies, which is education, like I said at the beginning, and how sustainability, sustaining education in through monetary and legislative means. Education is infrastructure too. So please don't discount the fact, I don't know if anybody has been paying attention to state news, but McMaster recently came out with I think it's five prongs of how to revamp our education system in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And one of the prongs is appointed superintendent of education, which would be awful.
Instead of being elected.
Yeah, instead of being elected. So you wouldn't have a reflective education system based on, you know, what the constituents want, but based on what what is it called? You know what I'm talking about.
The chief executive of the state would want.
Right.
So basically a relic of conservative ideology.
Right. So that was Amendment 1. For your ballots out there, and if y'all remember voting in the past election that we just had, but thank you for saying no to Amendment 1, because that's very detrimental to what education would look like, especially education reformation. He's also looking at consolidation of schools. So if you're from the Charleston area, schools and school districts. So if you're from the Charleston area, the Charleston County School District recently consolidated Lincoln High School into Wando.
Yeah,
so you're taking kids from a population of just them and their environment of, local, their local environment. Mm-hmm. Now they have to change their whole schedule. They have to you learn all these new faces, because the population of Lincoln, I think, was 100 or less.
And the population of Wando, I can imagine, is somewhere around
5,000, 6,000 students.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that's wild. Changing your environment. And also, Lincoln is drastically farther out than Wando is compared to, you know, Charleston metro area.
Yes.
So, they have to go through Charleston metro, then go to Wando. So, mm-hmm. their transportation time is different. So now they have to wake up earlier. They have to get home later. So that affects homework time, test taking ability, what their schedules look like, physical health. Physical health affects test scores, believe it or not.
Yes.
And so now you have these students are drastically affected by just one consolidation. So please look out for it. So basically, in essence, please don't forget the educational piece of, you know, K through 12 when you consider sustainability, because it's not only, you know, climate change or homelessness or things like that. It's that's how you prevent those things is education. You prevent waste production. You prevent all those things by being educated. You prevent people being ignorant about climate change theory. You prevent homelessness by providing education. You provide people resources. So this is the starting point for everything, and it's how you maintain a society. That's literally what public education is meant to do, is to maintain a society. So when you think about sustainability, think about education, think about infrastructure, and public schools are creatures of the state legislature. That's an inside joke. Shout out to Dr. Archie Hudson. Delta Sigma Theta, Fall 58. love you.
The great Dr. Marguerite Archie Hudson.
Yeah, she worked with Maxine. She has a resume, okay?
Yes.
She has her own encyclopedia page.
Former majority whip of the California State Legislature. Yes.
Used to run housing and urban development out in...
Yeah, and casually is a professor now, just chilling.
Yeah, acting like she don't have a resume.
Well, Zaylee, I thank you for bringing your topic back around full circle and connecting it with sustainability. Okay. Hopefully we can chat again sometime here in Conscious Corner with Vanity.
This was great.
Thank you. Yes. You were great.
Oh, thanks.
And I hope you have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
All right.
This week, I'm deciding to treat all of you with the Stone Soup Collective's weekly soup. This week we have Cajun chickpea and sweet potato soup. Let's dig in. Synergies is a digital platform produced by the Office of Sustainability at the College of Charleston to educate, inspire, and mobilize students, staff, and the greater community to embody sustainability in their work and their lives. We intend Synergies to be a community resource with articles, essays, artwork, podcasts, and DIY projects connected with creating a thriving Earth for all.